Welcome back. Good Saturday morning once again. It is the weekend kickoff. ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. Phil Devine, Armando Vasquez. I'm Ballpark Frank. Big Terrence, he's out and about making things happen. And, of course, the man that's really put the show all together, brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition each and every Saturday morning. And the best in the business, good friend of mine for years and years of all of ours in here, Mr. Stitch Duran, joining us this morning as well. And always great to see you, Stitch, and always great to have some time. I do want to touch real quickly. You guys were talking about Muhammad Ali. And like I say, I'm a little bit older than you guys, so I grew up in that era. Now, I grew up in the lily white suburbs of Chicago. I'm not straight from Chicago. I'm about 45 miles northwest in a town called Crystal Lake. I remember Ali and the talk about him throwing his gold medal in the river, about Joe Frazier. Back when I was, I think it was maybe middle school or grade school even, when the first Frazier-Ali fight took place, there was basically two camps in this country. You were Joe Frazier or you were Muhammad Ali. You know, the country was completely divided. There was a lot of racism. There was, you know, there were still separate drinking fountains. People sitting in the back of the bus. I mean, it wasn't that awfully long ago. People act like it was eons ago or something. It wasn't. You know, Frazier was the guy who waved the flag. He was Mr. USA. He won the gold medal for us. And he was the big thug that threw the hard punches and wanted to obliterate everybody. Ali was the cocky kind of guy who threw his gold medal into the Potomac, and not at that time, but there was certainly a certain camp about him. There was a different feel about him. And depending on where you lived and what your parents rooted for and everything, a lot of that determined who you rooted for. I was a Joe Frazier fan. I respected Ali. I respected what he did. I respected the hell that he beat Sonny Liston and his speed and his athleticism and the stuff that you mentioned, how he was the best on a microphone. He actually got that from Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
Gorgeous George the wrestler is where he would watch film of him. He basically imitated him. And then the ironic thing, Hulk Hogan and all these guys today, The Rock and all them, they watched Ali. And so it kind of went full circle. It went back to wrestling.
It always goes back to wrestling, Ballpark. You know that.
That's the roots, right?
I love it.
But as much as Muhammad Ali meant in the ring, and I remember the Norton fights and the Frazier fights and the Foreman fight, and sadly enough, the Larry Holmes fight, where Larry Holmes was basically begging him, please stop this fight. But Ali wouldn't stop it. The ref wouldn't stop it. So he had to do what he had to do. I mean, he cried after that fight. He did not want to be in there beating the hell out of his idol.
And they were sparring partners.
Yeah. And they were sparring partners and they were friends. Yep. But he said Ali just wouldn't quit. And he guaranteed, he said, the thrill in Manila, if Joe Frazier wouldn't have quit, Muhammad Ali wouldn't have quit either. They might have killed each other in that ring because that was just a crazy time. And it's amazing how things went full circle. When Ali first came out and he said that he was, you know, changing his religion and he wasn't going to go into service, a lot of people out in this country thought he was just trying to dodge the draft. If he wanted to be a draft dodger, he would have gone to Canada or something like everybody else did. He stayed in this country. He gave up his title. He gave up endorsements. He gave up the money. He was threatened with being thrown in jail, and he's like, fine, do it. So you knew it wasn't a phony thing. And then years and years later, they were talking to John Carlos the other day on ESPN with the Black Power at the 68 Olympics, and they talked about what a big inspiration Ali was to them. It's just amazing how the same guy who was vilified by half the country and loved by a good percentage as well, but as the time passed and the world passed and the country changed, he went from being somebody who was despised and vilified and literally spit at and people couldn't stand. When he lit that Olympic torch, almost everybody cried when they saw it. There wasn't a dry eye in Atlanta or anywhere in this country. So he became a hero. But for younger people out there that think that he was always beloved and this, that, and the other, he was not. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he was hated for quite a while. And, you know, you talk about how his popularity rose over the years and all of that negativity and all the prime of his life, you know, taken away from him when he was banned from boxing. When all of that was going on, and now he is. And, I mean, I may be coming on the ledge here, but I think he's the most famous American of all time.
He might be the most famous person
ever.
Worldwide. He was the most recognizable person on the face of the earth. And for everything he did in the boxing ring, what he did outside the boxing ring on a worldwide scale, just dwarfs anything he did in the squared circle.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are kind of forgetting the things he did outside of the boxing ring. And he was just so instrumental and really kind of curving so many people's lifestyles and calming so many tensions out there that, you know, he went out there and just did it with his heart.
And I know Armando said how sad he was when he passed away. I was almost relieved by it, and I don't mean that in any kind of negative way whatsoever. This guy suffered from Parkinson's and was so sick for so long. Whatever you believe in spiritually, a higher power, whatever it is, I just hope and pray that now he can finally truly rest in peace. Because this was a sick, sick man for a long, long time. He suffered pain every day of his life.
Those last pictures that were taken of him and shown
recently. Why would they do that?
They were tough. And I know a lot of people are looking at those pictures and they're like, look at his eyes. The fire is still in his eyes. No, that is a beaten and withered man. And you're absolutely right. At least the suffering is gone. And, you know, you talk about that rivalry with Frazier. When I first got into radio, I was based out of New York, and I used to work with Randy Gordon. I know, Stitch, sure. You know him well. Randy Gordon, former editor-in-chief of Ring Magazine, later became the New York State boxing commissioner. He and I did a show together, and it was an MMA and boxing show, and his goal was, I want to get Joe and Muhammad together. I want to have them, which they did finally, years later, patch things up. But I remember first time I ever met Smokin' Joe Frazier, him coming in studio with his big cowboy hat, his big leather jacket. You looked like a cowboy, really did. Seriously, straight off of the Marlboro Man package, you know. But he broke down and cried when he talked about Muhammad and just what a person he was and how, you know, there was all of this hatred, but he never knew why. And he's like, I don't know why. You know, he's like, I don't think he really hated me. You know, but he was so good at making me look bad.
And he was also good at selling tickets. He said, you know, he's the one who called him the gorilla and then punched the little plastic gorilla. I mean, Muhammad Ali said some very unflattering things.
Vile.
Now, he claims it was just to sell tickets and that, but if you're Joe Frazier and fans of his or his family, you're going, who the hell is this guy?
Well, Frazier's son did an interview when he was talking about it, how, you know, they were a couple of years after one of their fights, you know, Ali came up to him and he's like, hey, how you doing? They tell your dad I said hi. And like, look, what? Tell my dad you said hi.
Well, it's supposedly like, he apologized to him. Like, tell him I apologized nothing. For tell everything I said. Yeah. But
exactly.
Then he's you tell him.
It's like you said, Frank. It was to sell tickets, and he did it better than anyone. And, you know, I do want to move on a little bit. We are up against the clock. As always, things roll so fast in here. But we did have another passing this week, and I'm not saying they are on the same level, but a great entertainer who put eyes on the sport, and that was Kimbo Slice, passed away suddenly. This was not like Ali, where it was years of suffering. This was a very sudden death. Monday night, Kimbo Slice, probably one of the most famous MMA fighters ever. Not the best MMA fighter ever, but the most famous, well-known MMA fighter ever, suddenly passed away. And Stitch, I know you knew Kimbo very well.
Yeah, you know, when he fought in the Tough Show, I wrapped his hands, and during every time he fought, I wrapped his hands, you know, so we always had that one-on-one moment together. And, you know, and then he would show me respect in the back. He's not fighting, we're at a show together, and he would always come and show me his love. And his bodyguards, the guys that were with him, his brother and these other guys, were a little bit more scarier looking than Kimbo Slice. But taking that shell away from him, such a nice, nice guy, you know, and he did what he did with the skills that he had, and he maximized that.
Well, and you mentioned the people around him being scarier. Before he got into the MMA world, the people that he used to fight for were scarier.
Yeah.
Doing the bare-knuckle backyard brawls for pimps and drug dealers and who knows what else. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who, again, I never thought he was a legitimate MMA fighter. He didn't have the skills, and it wasn't his fault. He didn't break into it. But as even Dana White once said, he may not be the greatest fighter, but he's the toughest guy at the barbecue. I mean, this guy, a hurricane wiped out his home. He was living in his car. He was fighting bare knuckle in people's backyards for whatever, $20, $200, whatever it was. Literally tackling them over the barbecues and the grills and going bare knuckle. He must, you wrapping his hands must have been incredible to him, because he's like, whoa, this is what it feels like, to have a little bit of padding out there.
Like,
normally when I miss hitting a guy, then I hit the 2x4 or the brick wall behind him or something. This is kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I used to see his backyard videos, and he was just brutal. You know,
what he did,
he was good at what he did for that situation. And he was in boxing. Now, keep in mind, Gary Shaw promoted him as a boxer. And, you know, I had made comment to one of Gary Shaw's sons that, you know, Gary Shaw was using him like Top Rank did Butterbean, the king of four rounders, and he got mad at me, but it was the truth. You know, Kimbo Slice was not going to be a world champion, was not going to be a top 10 fighter, but he was selling tickets.
Well, you know, the other funny thing about him, too, was some people gave him bad press that for stuff that wasn't his fault. Yeah. When Seth Petroselli knocked him out and it was found out that he was given a bonus not to take it to the ground, a lot of the media and a lot of the people were like, oh, Kimbo didn't come up and give him the money. Kimbo didn't say, don't take me to the ground. That was the organization trying to promote him for it. But Kimbo took some of the backlash from stuff like that.
He certainly did. And Stitch mentioned Gary Shaw's son. And let's be honest, that was the downfall of Elite XC and that whole entire MMA promotion. And I remember the day that happened where I believe it was Gus Johnson came across the screen before the fight started, and he said, got some bad news, folks. Ken Shamrock was in the back doing a little sparring, and he cut his eye. Can't fight. And Seth Petroselli has taken the fight. Oh, it's over. Oh, it's done. People are going to know. And that's no knock on Kimbo, because Kimbo Slice was a fighter. He was a fighter at heart. You talk about those backyard videos. They were entertaining as hell. They were also scary as hell.
Sure.
Watching what those guys would do to each other, I wouldn't do that for any amount of money. I mean, I would rather step in a cage than I would step in one of those backyards, because you don't know if you're going to live or die. You really don't. And if you look at guys in the UFC today, George Masvidal, he got his start fighting in those videos backyard in Miami.
Alex Caceres.
There you go. Caceres. These were guys that made, that's how they got started in this sport. And Kimbo, for everything that he did, he is still, besides the Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez fight, that CBS fight where he made his primetime debut was the most watched mixed martial arts fight ever. And I remember going to that event. That was at the Meadowlands in Jersey. Or not the Meadowlands. That was the Izod Center, which was the Meadowlands before then. But that was in Jersey. And there were fans there that had no idea what mixed martial arts were. I remember Robbie Lawler. I think he fought Scott Smith. He might have fought Robbie Lawler against Scott Smith, and Lawler took him down, and one of the guys behind me jumped up and was like, and Frank, not to drop wrestling on you, DDT! That's how little they knew about the sport, but what it was is those eyes were drawn to it. Kimbo put butts in the seat, and I mean, he did it for Bellator too, and I know, you know, he was scheduled to fight in a month. In England, and you know, things are going to come out. I don't know what they are, but it is a shame, and I am saddened because Stitch, you brought it up, was not the guy you expected when you were wrapping his hands. Right. He was a family man. He was a loving man. He was one of the friendliest. When I talk about those 98.9% of the people that you meet are great guys, Kimbo was probably one of the best. Remember, funny, quick, real story, we were going back in time, when I first met him, he was doing the Tough Show, doing his publicity. It was back in New York, and I'm in Howard Stern's green room, and I said, hey, Kimbo, can I get you something to drink? Some water, some iced tea. And he had his sunglasses on indoors, and he rolled them up a little bit, and he looked at me, and he said, got any Hennessy? Sadly, we did not, because I would have loved to have seen where it went from there. But that guy, he lived hard, partied hard, and he was a ton of fun, and he will be missed.
Yes. Yeah.
When you're fighting backyard bare-knuckled for pimps, for drug dealers, for who the hell knows what else down in Florida, you better be tough. They don't have cutmen like Stitch Duran in their corner. No. They don't have EMTs. If you get hurt, you go to the hospital and you stitch yourself up. They don't have the best in the business, Stitch Duran, to stitch him up.
No,
it's a tough way to make a living. As much as people laughed and joked about the fight with him and Dada 5000, if you don't know Dada 5000, it was the same story. I mean, I'm giving blood the other day, and I'm looking at the documentaries, and I see this one on Backyard Brawls, and it was the story of Dada 5000. I found out more about him in that fight. He was basically a poor man's Kimbo Slice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely was. Yeah, it definitely is sad, and you know, his family's the one that I feel for right now, because it was so sudden, and he leaves behind six kids. It is sad.
Yeah, and let me just add one thing also. It kind of went in the passing, but one of the cutmen for the UFC, Huitzimata, that was indigenous, you know, had the necklace on his neck and all, he passed away also last week. And that was sad, you know. And,
very sad.
You know, and at the fights that they had over the weekend, you know, we were anticipating, see if the UFC was going to do something about it, and they never mentioned it.
Of course not.
You know, and then Ken Norton, another great heavyweight, passed away. You know, so
Armando brought that up to me.
I was trying to, I was trying to find the confirmation of that. I was like, no, that can't be, because that's another one. I mean, no.
It was a rough week for combat sports. There. Certainly was.
Real quick before we go. Okay, Stitch, you have a fight coming up here soon with Vladimir Klitschko.
Yes.
Yes. I'm assuming you're going up to that one.
Of course.
Okay, now, me being the fight fan that I am, please tell me that he's training really hard and he's going to drop this guy inside two rounds, because I still can't believe what I saw the last fight between these two. I mean, Tyson Fury's bigger than him, taller than him. But come on. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, skill-wise, it was a very disappointing night for me, for all of us. I just didn't know what happened to Vladimir Klitschko. And, you know, I'm looking at the fight and I'm asking myself, did I just see Vladimir get old overnight? But I think it was an accumulation of so many different things outside of what he does in the ring. But, you know, as smart as he is, as intelligent as he is, he broke down everything from management down to the camp, the team, and everything, and broke it down and realigned everything to make sure that things are going to be done properly. And I expect him to knock him out. Whether it's going to be two, I don't know. I'm going to say five or six rounds.
Five or six rounds. Yeah. I like it. And I keep arguing with people. Andre Ward will beat
Kovalev.
Yeah,
that's a question. You know, I like I say, I don't like to be an armchair quarterback, and that's a question that, you know, people are always talking about, and people are going to talk about, because it's a big fight. You have the articulate, great looking fighter like Andre Ward that does everything right, with a guy like Kovalev that will knock you out in one shot. You know, I could have said that Amir Khan was going to beat Canelo. You know, but it's that one shot.
Stitch, don't mention that guy's name on this show, because we
Stitch, is it Canelo or Canelo?
We'll have to bring you back for that one, Rich.
With Amir Khan, it was Canelo, but it was a shot. It was a cannon shot. In this game, I've been in so many fights, Armando, that I don't pick them anymore, because all it takes is one shot and it changes the whole course of the game.
Well, yeah, because...
Of course, I want Andre Ward to win, because I'm going to be working with him.
Yeah. Sergey Kovalev is awesome, but I still want Andre Ward to beat him, but that's just my personal opinion.
Well, mine too.
Hey, we've already gone a little bit long here, so I got to throw this in real quick. Where can people get a hold of you and see everything you're doing? Because you got a ton of stuff on your plate, my friend.
Yeah, you know, on my Twitter's at Stitch Duran, and I guess I just went 10,000 followers today.
Nice.
On Instagram. I just got into that, but that's Stitch Duran. So, hashtag Stitch Duran, right?
Any more movies?
You know what? I was up in Florida, the Seminole Hard Rock Cafe Casino Friday, and this one guy comes and takes pictures with me, and he's a producer, and he's making a movie of 1980 Miami with the old drug lords and what have you not. And I told him, I said, coincidentally, I did an interview, and the question was asked, would you be interested in playing another part outside of yourself? I've been in six movies playing myself. And I said, yeah, you know, I could either be a drug dealer or I could be a terrorist. Well, he took my number down, and we've been in communications, and you just never know, you know. And then that Kickboxer Vengeance, when I was doing the World Series of Fighting in Los Angeles, they filmed the walkout scene of the fighter fighting actually Shogun. And the director, producers knew that I was there, so they paid me a nice little fee to put the Vaseline on the guy. So I don't know if that counts, but who knows?
A lot of people don't know that Stitch used to be train in Muay Thai. Trainer?
That was a high school of Muay Thai kickboxing. I started in Thailand in 1974 for that.
So who the hell wraps your hands?
I learned myself, man. See that scar right there? I literally.
Somehow I knew that was the answer. All right, real quick, since we completely blown this segment way overboard.
That's
we are having good time, and
here.
That's what we are. It's always been that way with you. If you could wrap one person's hands, who would it be? One person that you haven't had a chance. Ali, we just talked about in glowing terms, so let's take him off of the radar. One person other than Muhammad Ali, all time, whose hands would it be a privilege for Stitch Duran to wrap?
Well, you know, that's a good question, but all the guys that I've wrapped have been tremendous. But so far, the guys that I've wrapped that have been at the top of the line has been Fedor Emelianenko. that was, it doesn't get much better than that. I don't know if there's anybody out there right now, Ballpark Frank, that I would say would, I would get as excited as if I wrapped their hands as I would somebody like Fedor. So I've done them all, man.
Interesting that you should say Fedor, because I remember the night over at the, I believe it was the MGM, when you were talking about when you wrapped Krokov's hands that night, and he was basically in tears because it was his last fight.
It was his last fight, and we were talking, and I'm wrapping his hands. I said, well, Krokov, what are you going to do, you know, now that you retire? And he says, well, you know, Stitch, I'm going to spend my money. He says, no. He goes, in all seriousness, I got a Porsche, I got a Mercedes, I have this. I've been all over the world, but, you know, I've never seen the world. I've just seen the hotel, the gym, in the arena. He says, but I've had, I think it was like 6 surgeries, you know, so he was beat up, you know. But those are the kind of interactions that I get with these guys when I'm working with them.
I saw Krokop just recently on a picture, and the dude looks jacked. The retirement's treating him well, for sure. But I just hope to say, you know, 2 years down the road, if Hollywood, they're constantly remaking movies, a little Scarface action remade with Stitch. Can you imagine Stitch coming out? Yeah. Say hello to my little friend. I want to see it, Stitch.
Chicano style. But Creed 2, it's going to happen another 2-3 years. And spoke to Michael B. Jordan when Andre Ward fought in Oakland. And I'll be part of that also. So
no, I don't think anybody could have patched up Al Pacino in that role in Scarface. But if anybody could have, it would have been you.
Yeah.
All right, that is it. Weekend kickoff here. We got one more segment. We'll have a little bit of time left to talk about the NHL, the NBA, and some other things as well. It is the Weekend Kickoff. ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM, brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition.